Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to chat to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Morning, Russell.
Yo. I panicked. Very easily, very quickly I panicked there.
It's P-Dog in the morning.
Yeah, what's P-Dog in the morning? How's it, guys?
Welcome to the video store. Thank you for popping in to our lovely video store. We got all these movies, all these series. We've realized we've even got games that we can rent you. Thank you for popping in. And so this is our Clerks Chat, where we get together and we talk about all the movies and the series we're watching. Today is Heritage Day.
Yes.
So it's a nice public holiday, so I'm sure some folks are going to pop in soon to rent stuff, because that's what you can do on a public holiday. But until then, the three of us will have a fat chat about what we're watching.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm joined by Graham.
Hello.
G-Spot. Or G-Force Spot.
G-Spot.
Every time you say hello, you have to moan.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. The possibilities are endless. Graham is the producer of our show. He is also an editor. We're not working at the video store.
Yeah.
We've got Perrin.
Hello.
P-Dog.
Yeah.
P-Dog in the morning. I'm not quite sure what that means. I think I wanted to go for like a radio thing.
Oh, yeah. No, P-Dog in the morning. We can work with that.
But it sounds weirdly sexual.
Yeah. So does G-Spot.
I was about to say.
Especially when your tagline for him is anything is possible.
Oh, Jesus. Perrin, you are a editor, a writer, amongst many other things. We're not working at the video store. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg.
That's where I know you from. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And so this is our Clerks episode, where the three of us get together once a week and we're talking about the movies and the series that we're watching. This week is a little bit of a quieter week in terms of, you know, big major releases.
Yes.
So it gives us a chance to talk about some more extra stuff. Mm. One of which, of the films that came out last week, was Bad Genius. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about that and see where that goes, because that's it's a remake. It's a remake.
Yeah. Okay.
Was it Thai? South Korean?
No, it's Thai.
It was a Thai film. That's right. We screened it at the Bioscope through the Embassy of Thailand.
That's cool. I really like the original.
Yeah. So now this is a sort of a more Hollywood, bigger studio remake.
Yeah.
So we want to get into that. And then we're going to talk some TV shows.
Nice.
As well. We've got some good reality TV shows to talk about. Some good sort of more limited series ones that are on at the moment. So we'll get into that. But let's start with a quick round of Hey Did You Guys See?
Nice.
Hey Did You Guys See? Mm-hmm. That Shrinking is returning to Apple TV Plus on October the 16th.
Nice.
Shrinking is a delightful and really smart and really good TV show. It was done by Bill Lawrence, who's the guy behind Scrubs and Cougar Town and Spin City. Super smart, and it's a perfect example of the new era of TV where very famous people are now in TV shows.
Yes.
That would have otherwise never done TV. One of which is Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
And in this case, our main character is also Jason Segel. Mm. So he plays a psychologist whose life has been recently derailed by the death of his wife.
Right.
So it's all centered around him and his practice. Harrison Ford is his sort of boss, so to speak. They run the practice together, or he runs the practice. And it's all about the guy kind of figuring his life out, trying to sort of work on himself.
Right.
Especially when he spends a lot of his time working on other people.
Yes.
It's season two, right? Coming up.
So it was a great success, and I think everyone really loved it. If you're a big fan of Scrubs, then you'd really love it. It's that sharp, witty dialogue that Bill Lawrence is so good at.
Yeah, the chemistry is great between all of them.
It just was a good formula. And speaking of Bill Lawrence, later in this episode, I'm going to touch on Bad Monkey, which is his new Apple TV Plus show.
Okay.
All right.
Nice. Hey, did you guys see the trailer for Mickey 17?
Yes.
I saw it a long time ago and I couldn't talk about it.
Yes. It looks so good.
You mentioned that.
Oh, hey, my God.
So yeah. I got shown that trailer at a special junket.
That's cool.
By hosted by Empire.
Yes.
Talking about all the releases coming up.
Nice.
And
that's fucking
cool. I couldn't wait to talk about it on the show and to you guys. And then at the end of the junket, the lady was like, "You guys know you can't talk about this, right?" And I was like, "Fuck."
It looks so good. How good is Robert Pattinson's voice?
Yes.
Dude, that guy has range. Yeah. It's insane. Like his voice in Boy and the Heron, the English dub. Arthur was Willem Dafoe when I first heard it, and it was fucking Robert Pattinson.
So that's what I was saying, because she then said, you can be vague, but like you could talk about it, but nothing too specific. And so when I then spoke about it, I said, and what I love is Robert Pattinson's character in this movie is very unlike what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
So Mickey 17, I'm going to go on about it, and I'm never going to shut the fuck up about it.
Because it looks so cool.
It means a lot to me. Yes. And why it means a lot to me is that when the Bioscope did its upgrade, and we were now able to screen these bigger studio films at the beginning of the year, I identified that.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my God, this looks amazing. Because it is the first film that Bong Joon-ho chose to do after Parasite.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, and for those who don't know, Bong Joon-ho won all those awards for Parasite, but he's a really amazing,
fucking amazing filmmaker,
Korean director.
Yeah,
and so this intrigued me. I then found the book that it was adapted
from.
The book is called Mickey 7, and it was written by a guy called Edward Ashton. Mm. And I loved it because I've had very few cases in my life where I've read the book first. I then found the author's website.
Yes.
I sent him a mail on a whim. Hey, I'm from South Africa. Be great to talk to you because we know this movie's coming out. And he agreed to it.
That's cool.
And so I've said it before and I'm just going to say it again because I'm so proud of it. I've banked an episode with Edward Ashton.
Fuck yes, that's
that
cool.
That will come out later before this release. So the film got delayed because of writer strikes. And so it is now... It's got its release date. It's going to be at the end of January.
Yeah.
And it's set in the near, well, not near, set in the far future where we're colonizing planets. And on these missions, they have someone called an expendable, which is a person who they've got the ability to clone.
Yeah.
But they make this person do all the shittest jobs or test atmospheres or try different weird poisons. because they know they can make another one.
Yes.
Robert Pattinson plays this. The character's called Mickey. And at the start of the story, they think he's dead. So they make another one, only to... He survives.
Yes.
And realizes that he's been cloned. So now there's two of them on this base. But they can't reveal this.
Right.
Because it's an abomination. but Mickey plays like a loser.
Yeah. Mm.
That's the thing, is that it's not this kind of hardcore, cool, you know, when you hear the plot, you think it could be this kind of big Dwayne Johnson movie, but it's not. It's quite punk rock.
Mm.
And there's great questions on sort of morals and what it means and who's real, you know, who's the right Mickey, or are you even real anymore if you're a clone? And it's lovely. It's so smart.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
And so... They've revealed the trailer,
so
people now get a sense that it's coming, and it's all very exciting.
Mm.
So sorry, I went on a long rant there, but
it looks far more comedic than I was expecting. It just looks like a straight comedy.
Which
I wasn't expecting.
Bong Joon-ho is really good at implementing humor in everything. I mean, this obviously, like you said, it looks more like a straight up comedy, but like it's got that Bong Joon-ho weird humor.
Yes.
Like flowing through it. But like a lot of these new wave Korean directors have that sense of humor in most of their works. Park Chan-wook has it in all of his works.
Definitely.
You know? But
no, and so it is cool that it seems as fun as it is.
Yeah. I don't know why they're releasing it in January, though. January is usually a bad month. January is typically where studios send movies to die when they have no faith in them.
I wonder if they're sending it closer. Would that be out of the Oscar?
Well, all the Oscar films
tend to come out towards the end of the year.
Late December.
November.
Yeah.
So I think it could be for Oscar consideration.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I know that the big plan as to why it was delayed, a bit, obviously a big part of it was the writers' strike, yes, and how they needed more time.
Yeah.
But also, not to give too much away, but it came out in the chat that the feeling was also that Warner Brothers didn't want it too close to Dune.
Because
they didn't want two big sci-fi films to come out in a year.
Okay.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, did you guys see... Now, this one breaks my heart. Hey, did you guys see Lionsgate? Lionsgate, one of the biggest fucking studios and distributors in the world, pens a deal with AI research firm called Runway to mine its catalog to produce future film and TV projects.
Wow.
So... this is bad because now this AI research company, so unlike ChatGPT where it's like text-based AI, Runway is text-to-video generator.
Yes.
So now what they're saying is that Lionsgate are claiming that they're going to use it to do like previs and like storyboards and stuff. Previs is pre-visuals. So you get an idea of how things are going to look and stuff like that. But now people are saying they are reckoning that they're going to actually, this is one step closer to them literally putting a draft of a script straight into this and then showing us a movie of what it would look like.
Jeez.
And one of the main films, because John Wick 5 is in development right now, they want to use this as like the first starting point to see what John Wick 5 would look like.
Right.
And this is such a terrible thing that's happening because it's one step towards eliminating writers and directors.
Yeah.
Like, what's the fucking point?
Mm.
And it's just going to get stronger and better at it. But the problem with AI like this, I mean, look, everything's a copy of a copy, right?
Yeah.
But say, for instance, Graham, if you sat down and wrote a movie about your personal life experience, no one can replicate that because that happened to you.
Yeah.
That's your life experience. The problem with this AI thing is that it's just copying everything that's been done and just, you know what I mean? Like,
sure. No, I get it. And of course, I think it's just one of those, it's such an inevitable,
it's awful
that
though,
it exists.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And that it makes sense that on a large studio scale, you bring it in to sort of see its possibilities and you rather the enemy you know than
but
I think there will always still be a place for that original content.
Yeah,
I think people will be, you'll be able to see the, you'll be able to feel the difference.
So I agree. I don't think it's going to eliminate all filmmakers and all writers, but I mean the problem with this is a lot of the times they try to paint it as like, oh, just look at it as a tool, not the actual solution. But I know these studios are going to get lazy and they're going to be like, fuck it, let's just churn out. I mean, we'll get some movies. But
best believe we will get that.
Yeah.
There's no fucking question that there will be these. And people will probably want to go and watch them to see what. But they're not going to.
Do you know what I think it is
They're not going to shine through as being remarkably different.
I read an article where someone suggested this, and it's interesting, is that they think this is another element where they'll be able to monetize it as a service to customers, where they can literally take any script or any film that they love and they can implement themselves into the story. So it's almost like an interactive experience for them, right? But then I know we're going to get a whole bunch of, like, you know when people use what's the painting AR one?
Mid Journey,
where people are like, look what I made on Mid Journey. You didn't make it. You just said words and the machine did it for you.
Yeah.
So like people can be like, look at what I directed.
But people will see the difference. And you know, even doom scrolling Instagram, like,
no, you can tell the difference.
And you can spot, even like just with the people, you can spot like...
Yeah, all their hands are weird.
And also there's like...
they've got like three layers of teeth.
Two perfect sort of women and you're like, you're not real.
The best, my like, favorite.
We will get smarter. So just in defense of humanity, my argument is that like we will be able to see the wood from the trees.
Oh yeah, totally.
The one tree is going to...
the whole uncanny valley thing,
Even if it gets really, really smart, like we'll just get smarter with it.
Yeah, because the thing you need to remember is right now, it's the worst it's ever going to be.
That's true.
It's only going to get better.
Yeah,
because one of my favorite things on Facebook and social media is boomers being fooled by AI.
No,
so sure. They'll be like, there's like
obvious AI.
There's a picture of like there's a funny one of like Jesus Christ as like a lobster man, like he's got lobster hands, and then all the comments are like the caption is like say amen if like like, or there'll be a picture of there's that one where it's a veteran where he's got a sign that says it's my birthday but no one cares and he's crying. But he's got two prosthetic legs that have fake feet on. And the people are like, amen. So sad. Oh my goodness. How could we treat our veterans like this? It's like, it's clearly fake. Stop fucking doing this. Yeah. Oh my God. But anyways, next one.
Yeah.
In terms of responding to sort of current things.
Yeah.
Hey, did you guys see one of the cartoons that Zapiro published in the Daily Maverick last week?
I didn't.
You didn't? Okay. In the chat that we had, our last guest chat was with Zapiro because a film based on his work called The Showerhead is in cinemas at the moment. He was our guest. And in the chat, he was talking about going to the Lavia to watch Beetlejuice.
Yes.
Which I thought was very cool. And how he was so chuffed to see his film or a film about him.
Yeah.
You know, being shown at the cinemas. In Beetlejuice, if you remember, there's the Soul Train.
Yeah,
that was which great is bit, the, the literal train in the underworld that takes people off, right? And in current news, it was discovered that as many as 1,277 ghost workers are employed at PRASA, which is our people rail agency in South Africa. So a ghost worker is someone who is on payroll that doesn't fucking exist in real life. So Zapiro very smartly used the Beetlejuice Soul Train to show these ghosts on a train and say, is this the Soul Train from Beetlejuice?
Wow.
Or is it all the people that are getting a full salary
that don't exist?
That do not exist.
I thought, when you said the ghost workers, I thought they were like people who try to find, like Ghostbusters on trains.
Oh, no.
That would be fucking awesome. I would be like, don't you dare slander them. That is an amazing job.
And there's the guy going, no ghosts in this compartment.
Yeah. It's clear here.
Hey, do you guys remember last year when Barbie came out and we were like, we are going to be flooded with toy movies?
Yes.
Well, it's begun.
Yeah.
Okay.
They've officially announced the first of these is going to be a Matchbox movie, like Matchbox toy cars starring John Cena.
Are you sure it's not the Matchbox 20? No, that's crazy. Yeah. I didn't see that one. Yes. I saw that they announced the Sims movie.
And oh, really?
Yeah, EA wanted to be...
How is that going to work?
They wanted to be self-aware like Barbie.
Oh, my Lord. Margot Robbie's behind the Sims movie.
Really?
Mm, she's attached to it.
Wow. Jeez.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. We can look into that.
Okay. But Matchbox Cars. Is it the same company that...
I think Mattel own Matchbox.
Oh, they're Barbie,
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yep. Hasbro is also Transformers, right?
Yes, now.
Okay.
It used to be someone else, but Hasbro has subsequently bought it. Yeah, Hasbro owns tons of like G.I. Joe, all that stuff.
Is The Rock going to be... Is this plot going to have him in the jungle wearing the same beige shirt?
Probably.
And Kevin Hart's there, you know? That's wild, eh? Because I know they announced the Polly Pocket movie.
They've announced so many of
them. But they pulled out of that. I know Lena Dunham was supposed to do that.
Yes.
And she's a very controversial figure.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, hey? Mm-hmm. Matchbox movie, wild.
Why not?
It's my turn.
It's cars racing.
I guess so.
Yeah.
What are Matchbox toys?
They're just like tiny little toy cars. They're like Matchbox. Machines. Like they're called Matchbox because fit in a Matchbox. Oh. Yeah, very similar to Micro Machines, which I think is also Hasbro.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah. Okay, did you guys see Francis Ford Coppola gave a raving review of his own movie, Megalopolis, on Letterboxd. 5 stars.
Gave it 5 stars.
So it's got to be good.
Yes.
It's got to be good.
I mean, look, a director should give their own movie 5 stars because they should think it's good.
So one guy you guys should check out is Uwe Boll.
Yes.
He's a German filmmaker. He is routinely named as one of the, if not the worst filmmaker of all time.
Yeah.
He makes awful video game adaptation movies. He did... Remember like Time Crisis at the arcades?
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
There was a one with the zombies. It was called like Land of the Dead or something.
Yeah.
Anyways, he did that adaptation. Yeah. Anyways.
And a bunch of others.
Yeah, he did Blood Rain, Postal. All this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awful, awful movies. Go read his reviews on Letterboxd. He hates everything. He loves only his movies. And weirdly, he'll give like 5 stars to like The Godfather. And then he'll give like 0.5 star to like the most critically acclaimed movies ever. And he'll be like, this movie's shit. The woman is not hot. That's literally all he talks about. He talks about woman and how everything's shit. Like his Marvel movie reviews, it's so ironic because he trashes Marvel movies, but his movies are no better. His movies are fucking awful. Sorry.
But then
check him out.
Then you get David F. Sandberg, who's the guy who did Shazam, and he's done some other horror movies. He rates all of his own movies 0.5 star. And like
you see, that's great.
Like one point that like kind of trashes it in
yeah,
some way.
You see, that's a director I can get behind. Yeah. Uwe Boll, yes, this, what
Uwe.
A weirdo.
How do you even spell Uwe?
Uwe.
He, this guy's so weird. He has a YouTube channel as always. It's just insane. And he actually got into a fist fight where he beat the shit out of a film critic who trashed one of his movies.
He's repeatedly challenged critics to boxing matches.
And he's beaten the shit out of one of them. It's fucking, he's such a weird dude. Wow. Check him out. Uwe Boll.
Good old Francis Ford Coppola gave himself 5 stars.
Yes.
Listen, we've done this, right? We've given ourselves 5 stars before.
Yeah.
In some shape
or form. Just in general, in life. Yeah. I think I did a 5-star job today. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't have any more.
Yeah, I'm done.
No, I'm good.
So we got treated to a premiere of Bad Genius last week.
Yes.
I desperately tried to make it to join you.
I made P-Dog, it. Yeah.
But you went and represented us. So thank you for that. So I haven't seen the film.
Yeah, same.
But I did know, as we said before, that it was this Thai film.
Critically acclaimed
Thai film that was also called Bad Genius.
Yeah.
And so now we've got ourselves a sort of bigger budget remake.
Mm. Yeah. So
still Asian folk. Okay, so let's just give a quick back of the box.
Okay, so back of the box, Bad Genius. So there's a difference between this one and the Thai one, but back of the box generalization is that a student who's struggling with money, who's super smart, gets like this free ride into amazing top school because she's so smart. But to help money with her father, she starts helping all the other students cheat and they pay her good money. And it leads to a big heist. It's not a giveaway, but the central moment of the film is the heist is that she is going to cheat at the... She's going to get the answers at the SATs, which is like the most guarded test thing in the world. She's going to get the answers and she's going to distribute it to the students. So she's going to an earlier time zone where she does it before the rest of the country. So the Thai film, same premise, just I feel like the stakes are a little higher and it's like cooler. But that's the whole premise, essentially.
Okay. Yeah.
So
what did we think of the new one?
So the new one, look, I watched the Thai film for the first time last week. So I can't pretend that I watched it when it came out.
Sure.
I watched it, really enjoyed it. Fucking great suspense. It's basically a heist movie. It's really, really cool. The Thai one, they go to Australia because the international schooling test system gets done all over the world. So she figures out, let me go to Australia. They're like 5 hours ahead of us. Do the test, memorize the answers, go to the bathroom, text you guys, come back. Like, and it's so intense, like great suspense, really like edge of your seat stuff.
Right.
Great character development. American one's shorter by like about 30 minutes. I feel like the American one was good. It's decent.
But it's not even American actors, hey. So it's Asian folk are in the American
it's
one.
The main character's an Asian. She's a Chinese-American immigrant. She's Chinese-American. Her dad's an immigrant.
Right.
And that's played by...
Benedict Wong.
He's the dad. I love Benedict Wong.
Yeah. So the audience responded well to it.
Leon I love Leon Panierop. He's been a
I sat next to him.
Yes. He loved it.
Yeah.
And he emailed Rochelle, our publicist, to go, this is a Bioscope movie. So I was like, shit, I think I missed out.
So look, it's a fun, like, tight movie. It sucks because whenever you watch the original, you're obviously going to put the remake up against it, right?
Yes.
So when I watched this, like, they changed the ending where I felt the ending in the Tar one was more morally challenging, where you're like, okay, I get why this person's doing this, but I get why this person's doing this. The American one, I feel like, goes for a straighter line, and it's more definitive in what it wants to say. You know what I mean? Sure. And
it's interesting how sometimes that can reaffirm a sort of American moral as opposed to like an Eastern moral.
Or exactly, like right? So like... It did a good job. The audience responded really well to it. They really enjoyed it. And that's going to lead me to my next remake that I watched this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Is Speak No Evil.
I didn't know it was a remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did you watch it?
No, that was another one that I missed. Because I had to interview Zapiro.
Did you watch it? No, so I didn't even know we had a screening of that one.
Yeah, it was last week, Tuesday, at the UIP offices. But I couldn't go because...
Yeah.
It was on Monday. Was on Monday, I think.
Yeah, it was like early in the week, like in the middle of the morning.
Quite hard because it was during the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was when I was scheduled to do the recording with Zapiro.
But back of the box for that, right? So it's about a married couple. They're on holiday in Italy, and they've got a daughter, and they make friends with another couple from England. The protagonist couple are Americans, and they meet another couple who is led by James McAvoy. They're from England, they have a son, and they're like eccentric and fun and interesting, and they become friends on this trip. And then later on, when they all go back to their lives, James McAvoy invites them over for a weekend away. Like, come check our place out.
Come
to
our house, yeah.
Yeah. So they go over, and then like these people aren't who they seem. There's lots of social anxieties. It's like very uncomfortable. And eventually becomes it's a horror movie. It's like a social anxiety horror movie, right?
Right.
So the American one, so the original is a Danish film, and that only came out 2 years ago.
Okay.
So when they announced this was being remade already, I was like, why the fuck are they doing that? And by Blumhouse, I was like, they could either go really well, really badly, right? So they announced it, I was like, okay. And also my biggest problem with a lot of American remakes, like you said, with the American morals versus the Tar morals, right?
Yeah,
like with
sure.
Bad Genius, is that they are going to implement different things or beats and stuff that is going to affect what the meaning is meant to be about, right? So the Danish Speak No Evil is fucked up. It's 90 minutes. My dad's Danish. We grew up in a household where his cultural identity would flow into us, right? And one of the things, I don't know if it might not be all Danish people, but it's definitely my dad, and it can be relevant to other people, but anyways, is that he's overly polite. He says yes to everything. He doesn't speak his mind when he's in pain or if something's wrong or whatever. And I'm like that as well. I don't ask for help. I don't tell people when I'm uncomfortable, when I'm not enjoying stuff.
Interesting.
And that's what Speak No Evil is. It's if you don't speak up, how can you improve things for yourself, right?
Interesting.
So that's the premise of Speak No Evil, is that these people are always like, why don't they just leave? Why don't they just say no? It's because they're being polite. They don't want to put anyone out, right?
Yeah.
And that's the movie. It's social anxiety on a fucking whole nother level.
Mm.
And the Danish one is such a tightly packed movie that the finale, the final act is so fucking disturbing, and like it rattled me for weeks. I couldn't stop thinking about it. It fucked me up. The American one did such a good job in leading to the third act. It was basically a shot for shot remake.
Right.
Same tone, virtually no music was great. The trailer gives away way too much. Yeah. Avoid that. But then the final third act is like a fucking action thriller Hollywood movie.
They sort of chose for action over...
And it's a complete cop-out because also what they're trying to do, there's a line... I don't want to give away the line in the movie, but there's a line that perfectly summarizes why this is all happening. It's in the Danish one and the American one. In the American one, I'm like, fuck yes, thank God they did that. But then they do something where it goes a different route and it defeats the purpose of why he said that line.
Okay.
The whole idea and like meaning behind the ending of the Danish one is completely lost because
and these
people fight back. You know what I mean? Like, it's just fucking, it really annoyed me because I was enjoying it till that point. James McAvoy is great. But then I was just like, what was the point of that? Like, it's not...
No, I get you. I think what's more interesting is just learning and understanding the difference in cultures.
Because that's the thing though, right? Like with something like that, I'll wrap it up now, but like with sometimes a movie needs to have an uncomfortable, disturbing ending for its point to be made across, to like actually affect viewers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The American one, I feel like the ending... Sure, it like affected some viewers, but I feel like it's not going to leave a lasting impression like the Danish one. You know what I mean? It's like Parasite's ending is so fucking good and it affects you. You know what I mean? Yeah. You think about it because it's a movie about class, you know?
Yeah.
And that ending summarizes that whole buildup. You know what I mean?
No, and I remember people also saying that Force Majeure.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus,
Which was...
Ruben Östlund.
He's also Danish, hey?
He's Swedish.
Swedish. Yeah. You know, made this movie, Force Majeure, which did really well, and it got remade into
a
film called Downhill with Will
Ferrell.
And it's funny, also kind of same thing, but completely different themes.
I mean, because you look at Ruben Östlund, his films, like him and Bong Joon-ho are so similar in that they both focus on class differences.
Yeah.
They do it in different ways, where Bong Joon-ho shows the poor and the rich are... The poor are better, but they're also not that much better. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then Ruben Östlund focuses on the class differences from the rich perspective, and he shows how stupid the rich are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right.
But also that Force Majeure was a case study on manhood.
Yeah,
100%. And what it meant to be the patriarch of your family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in this moment of crisis, you chose to like fend for yourself.
Yeah.
Instead of like helping your family. But anyway, so what this has prompted, and I'd love every time Perrin's on the show, is to come up with a list. So we did it one of the last times you were here. So what we thought to do is to do, and let's maybe not spend too much time on it, but I want to get into it, which is your list of the five
remakes
that are as good or at least on a par to its...
Yeah.
To its original.
So, I mean, it's hard.
But, no, exactly. And I thought you were going to do this in.
Yeah.
And I thought this might be your list for the week. And I was like, I can't think of one where the fucking remake is better.
Yeah.
So, let's hear your list.
Okay. So, I'm going to get shot down for this, but
it's your opinion.
Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria is far better than Dario Argento's Suspiria. Okay. So, I'm not a huge fan of butchering that pronunciation, horror, which is Italian horror. It's very like campy, super stylish, lots of neon lights. Suspiria is a gorgeous looking film, but there's not much substance to it.
Right.
Luca Guadagnino's Suspiria, I feel like, expands the lore and makes it more interesting. Cool. And it's
I don't know about any of those movies.
I haven't seen either of them.
It's so good. You know what it's about, right?
No.
So Suspiria is about a in the context of the remake, Dakota Johnson it's set in the 70s in Berlin. She is arrived at a ballet school, a very prestigious ballet school that is secretly a coven for witches.
Okay.
And it's so disturbing and so fucking good. And Tom York's score is amazing.
Oh, Tom York from Radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the original Suspiria score is iconic. Italian band called Goblin did it, and it's like phenomenal.
Okay.
Really good film.
Cool. Yeah.
And then next
number
one,
two.
12 Monkeys.
Okay. I could see how you could... You know.
So I loved Le Jeté. So I won't say it's better than Le Jeté.
Well, they're very... Yeah.
So,
okay. Le Jeté is a short film.
By Chris Marker, French filmmaker. Yeah, okay. So, the whole, you've seen 12 Monkeys, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen Le Jeté?
No.
Okay. So, Le Jeté is 12 Monkeys, but how the film is done, it's like 15 minutes, 20 minutes. It's only told through photographs and narration.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of the most unique sci-fi movies ever made. It's just spectacular.
Okay.
And 12 Monkeys is just the longer live action version of that.
Right. Sure, but with a cuckload more.
Yeah, with a cuckload more. Great narrative. Twist. Jesus, but the same twist as in Le Jeté. But 12 Monkeys is one of the few Terry Gilliam films I actually fucking love.
Yeah. No, 12 Monkeys is in my top 10 of all time.
It's so, so good. The whole premise is, yeah, Bruce Willis is a prisoner in the future, and he's been tasked to go back in time to try to stop a disease that wiped out 99% of humanity. Mm. That's the plot.
Okay. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry, Russ. I'm so sorry. Next one, The Birdcage.
Okay. I didn't know it was a remake.
Yeah, yeah. La Folie à Deux or whatever it's called. No, is that the Joker movie? No, anyways, La Cage of Folie, it's a French film made in the 70s, critically acclaimed. The Robin Williams, Nathan Lane movie is so much better. Mm. It's about two families who have to come together because, so there's a very gay couple, Robin Williams and Nathan Lane. They have a straight son who is marrying the daughter of a very conservative couple who one happens to be a Republican senator. Mm. And it's a hysterical movie about these two families having to, one having to compromise heavily for the conservative family. Mm. And it's such a good film because it's an important film because it's the first mainstream movie about gay people.
Yeah.
And it also it pokes fun at them in various ways. But the whole movie teaches people to not worry about changing who you are, just be yourself. And it's just a beautiful film.
But it's a lovely play on manliness.
So funny. And Jesus. How, yeah, toxic masculinity.
Well, just how Nathan Lane and there was just great parts of the movie where they're preparing to be less gay.
Yeah.
And what that would mean and sort of how the heterosexual male acts. It's great.
Nathan Lane's performance in it is one of my favorites of all time. It's so, so good. Then
That's a good one.
Yeah. And then I got two more. Mm-hmm. I've got loads more, but particular ones. I preferred Spielberg's West Side Story to the original. I loved Spielberg's West Side Story.
Okay. I still haven't seen it.
It's so, so good.
Cole didn't invite me when he went to see it, and I'm still mad about it.
Cole loved it, eh?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I watched it in Cape Town. I watched it
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, it was really.
So I prefer it to the American one, the original. And then I'm going to go a bit different here. There's several here that I wanted to name, but
pick one. Pick one.
Okay, so Floating Weeds by Ozu, Japanese film.
Okay.
He remade his 1930s silent film.
Right.
And he remade it in the 50s, 60s, I think 50s, into this beautiful color film. Mm. And it just makes the original so much better.
Okay, so this is a nice wild card, because this is a guy that gets to remake his own movie.
Yeah, wow. There's
a few people that have done that.
Hitchcock has done it. Michael Haneke has done it with Funny Games. But yeah.
What did Hitchcock remake?
He remade The Man You Knew Too Much.
Oh.
Yeah, so his original was in the 30s and then he remade it in the 50s.
Yeah.
That's interesting. A person going like, it just eats away at you going, I could do this better.
Yeah.
It differently.
Exactly.
Okay. So this movie you said is called?
Floating Weeds. So it's about, it's a Japanese film. It's about an acting troupe who returned to, an aging actor with this troupe. He returns to a seaside town. And while there, he reunites with his former lover, but he finds out he has a son. And this son thinks that he is the uncle. And this, of course, this whole development makes the aging actor, his current mistress, jealous. And it's such a fucking great movie.
Okay,
Ozu is just, great filmmaker. I prefer him to Kurosawa, actually.
Remade in color.
Remade in color. It's one of the most visually stunning films I've ever seen.
And when was the remake made?
The remake was made in, I think, 1956. I'll tell you now.
Okay, okay, this is a deep dive.
Yeah. Floating Weeds. Sorry, give me a moment.
No, but it just gives me an idea, because if the original was in black and white.
Yeah.
1959.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one thing that Ozu does really well that I love is that a lot of his films, the themes often have to do with young people and their relationships with their elders.
All right.
Like it's often the family dynamics are so good. Tokyo Story is one of my favorite films as well. But like with Floating Weeds, is just one of the most visually stunning films where everything that the black and white original was, which is still a great little movie, this just elevates it onto another level. The colors, the sound design, the cinematography. What Ozu does so well is that most of his shots are always at eye level for whoever's sitting down. And it always puts everyone on the same equal footing. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like there's no power dynamics. There's no like higher shots or lower shots. It's always everyone's on the same level and we see you the same way. You know what I mean?
It's always and interesting when that can be portrayed in a very visual way.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous film. If you ever want to deep dive into old Japanese cinema that isn't just Kurosawa.
Yeah. Okay. I must say, I'm really only a Kurosawa.
Kurosawa's phenomenal. I mean, Kurosawa's a great.
I don't think I've gone further. Yeah. So it's good.
But like with Ozu, his nuances I enjoy so much more. Like Tokyo Story is it's
I know
like
of Tokyo
chicken
Story.
Yeah, Tokyo Story is like chicken soup for the soul. It's just so wholesome and just lovely to endure. You know what I mean?
Nice. Love me some chicken soup.
Yeah. Sorry, I waffled a lot. I'm sorry.
Did you guys know that it's good? The True Lies is a remake.
Really?
Yeah, it's a remake of a French film.
That actually rings a bell.
Called Le Total.
I love True Lies.
True Lies is amazing.
It's actually my
dude.
Favorite James Cameron.
I think it's my favorite.
It's
James
so
Cameron.
Fucking funny. Yeah.
It's a
so
James.
Good.
It is a James Cameron yeah. movie. This is the Schwarzenegger, Jamie Lee Curtis. Yes.
That's wild.
And it's awesome.
It's so good. Movie.
Cameron needs to make a comedy again.
It's so yeah. good, hey?
Such a funny movie.
I love how he breaks people's necks. Yes. They're like ragdolls. Like, it's so good, man.
I watched a good movie.
Oh, yeah?
On Netflix.
Yeah.
It's called His Three Daughters.
Yeah. That's okay. a goodie.
Have you seen it?
I saw it last night.
You watched it? Okay. It's a nice Sunday movie. We nice. Had ourselves some miserable weather in, yes. in Joburg this last weekend, so it was certainly movie weather. It is a... it's a very simple, very, very beautiful film. The back of the box is you've got three daughters who all seem to be in different places in their life and different ages who have come together to look after their father who is on his deathbed.
Right.
And it's clearly a cancer where there's the degradation of the person and death can be imminent. Mm. It can be within the next few days, but you don't quite know when.
Yeah.
And so it's the three of them coming together to sort of be there when this happens. But each of them is in their own place.
Mm.
And it's great how the personalities come together. There's obviously a bit of friction, there's a bit of unsaid things.
Yeah.
And over the course of about 3 or 4 days, it all sort of comes out.
Right.
One of the things that I thought was very smart was that you hardly ever saw the dad.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah.
And there was a point where I thought, I wonder whether we're never going to see the dad. He was always in a room.
Yeah.
When the dad is revealed, it's done well, and I could see why they chose to do it in the way that they did.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you never see the dad. It's just these like three people
okay.
and one or two extra characters who are the hospice workers that come in.
Okay.
But another thing that's great, and I think it should be a really great inspiration for filmmakers, is that that's what you do when you don't have a lot of budget.
Yes.
Yeah, and, it feels like a play.
It, yeah. it played out like a play.
It's a three-hander, yeah, for sure.
And it's super simple.
Yeah.
And if you've got a great story, if you've got great characters and great actors, you can make this incredible movie.
Yeah.
It premiered at Toronto. It might be in the runnings.
I think
for
it's gonna.
Oscars.
It might get okay. Acting nominations.
Yeah, so you've got
especially Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah, you've got Natasha Lyonne, who we know from shows like Russian Doll.
Yeah.
What's that great one where she knows if people are lying?
Poker Face.
Poker Face.
Yeah.
But you might know her from the American Pie movies. She was
right.
the quirky
Natasha
sort of
Lyonne.
Punk rock girlfriend.
She's,
the one.
If New York could speak, that's what
she's got this incredible
like,
husky
she's
voice.
She's a Jewish New Yorker. He's like,
she's
so
great
sick.
And she's really good in this. So she's the one who lives in this apartment with the dad.
Right.
And now the two other siblings have come in, one of which is Elizabeth Olsen, who plays a more... They're all mentally unstable, but Elizabeth
Olsen, she's
like
a bit of an airhead.
She's a bit of an airhead, but she's more a bit hippie.
Yeah, she's a hippie, yeah.
She's come
Free
from
love,
years of experimenting with drugs and
Grateful Dead.
And watching bands like the Grateful Dead, and she does yoga, but she's very, very much an empath. She's very sensitive. where the other one, who's played by an actress, Carrie Coon.
I love Carrie Coon.
I don't know what else she's been in.
If you're familiar with The Leftovers,
yeah,
she is. She plays Nora Durst. So Leftovers is my favorite show of all time. Watch it.
Okay.
Damon Lindelof, he did Watchmen and Lost. It's fucking incredible.
She's the eldest sister, and she comes in very hard, quite, you know, filled with a lot of anger. Her kids are a lot older, and she's sort of struggling with a sort of teenage daughter that you see her kind of on the phone with every now and again. But she's hard, and she sort of wants to control, and it's just lovely how these three daughters come together in this movie. I don't know whether you want to add anything more, Perrin, but it's
yeah. You might recognize Carrie Coon, Gone Girl. He plays Ben Affleck's sister as well. If you go back and watch that, you'll see it too. But anyways, I thought it was great. It felt like a play. I love the. It struck home with me because I'm experiencing a similar situation to that right now. Like just looking after my dad, he's not sick or anything, but like there's just various elements which are proving to be more difficult as he gets older. And I live with him at home, so I'm looking after him. And the opening scene where Carrie Coon is just talking at Natasha Lyonne about like, this is what you haven't done, this is what I have to do, this is, she reminds me of one of my siblings who tends to bark orders at people. And she does it in good, she has good intentions, but she doesn't realize she's doing it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I feel like Natasha Lyonne in that movie, you know, where I'm just like, I live here. You don't see what I see. Yeah, I do and these things.
I've been
things.
Looking after this dad for however long, and you then, don't know him like I know him.
These people, and they're often in the movie, they often are like, oh, we're sorry we're in your space. It's your space. We don't want to ruin your space, but you have to do this, this, and this, and you haven't bought him this. You haven't done that, that, and that. Mm. Like, it's the same situation. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it just, it felt very smart. I loved how it felt like a play, like you said. I thought it was brilliant that they barely showed the dad. And the only time they really showed the dad is when, like, they're all working together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, oh, it's a lovely little movie, yeah.
But I just think that often there's a point where someone could go, how do I do it? How do I crack it? How do I become a director? How do I make it in the industry?
Yeah.
And when you look at this film, it was directed by a guy who's got a very, very interesting name. Azazel?
Yeah.
Azazel Jacobs.
Okay.
And when you look at his filmography, they're all very like indie New York, like filmy films.
Yeah, mumblecore.
Mumblecore. Yeah. You know, there's a whole thriving scene of these filmmakers that make these movies. They tend to always be set in New York for budgetary but also for poetic reasons. And so this is very much a New York movie, and they just pump these movies out in a good way. They make these great small beautiful indies that, you know, this is his sort of sixth or seventh film, but now this is one that premieres at Toronto. Now this is one that has someone like Elizabeth Olsen in it or Natasha Lyonne. So you get better and better stars, and this could be an Oscar contender. So that's how you make it. You work within what is possible for you as a filmmaker. And so like South African filmmakers should avoid trying to make a next sci-fi fucking
less is
thing.
More.
Or historical epics or certain things that are hard, do a fucking three-hander in an apartment.
But do
it well.
It's this film is a case of less is more. You know, just focus on them rather than the event. You know what I mean? Like and it feels true to that filmmaker. It feels like it's personal.
And
write what you know. You know what I mean?
Should we move on to TV shows?
Yeah.
We can do that.
On a lighter note. And also speaking of fathers.
I know what's coming.
we have very much enjoyed Jack Whitehall, Fatherhood with My Father, which is on Netflix. Jack Whitehall is a very quirky comedian and British personality and stumbled into a kind of format for a TV show where his posh father goes on travels with him.
It
was a very perfect, very appetizing, much loved concept that they've done multiple 100%. Times. Jack Whitehall's very famously admitted in his stand-up comedy that he comes from a posh background, having gone to the same school as Kate Middleton and things like that. So he leans into it. I watched a special of Jack Whitehall recently, and I was like, a little too much of him is too much.
Yeah, like, I feel the same.
He's quite a big personality.
Yeah.
And so when shared with someone like his dad, who's the sort of grumpier old guy, but a posh grumpy old guy, and he can poke fun at his age and him and his poshness, that works well. Jack Whitehall's now on the cusp of being a dad and in very much a British personality, a TV personality angle. Let's commodify it. So let's turn it into a show about him expecting this baby, then having the baby, and what the episodes are basically him looking into different facets of being a dad and the future. Things like the advancements of AI, for example. And this is the world that my child is going to grow up in, so I want to understand it. Or something like self-defense. So he enrolls in a self-defense class or goes in these crazy things. And it's delightful. And you learn. It's actually a smart show. Because
sounds great,
you learn about things like body modification and how this could be the future where people put like things under their skin. You know, where you can pay, how we tap with the card. Okay. It's like, can you do that with your hand?
Yeah.
Right now, it's still a little bit like kind of weird duties in a weird sort of part, out of a garage in America. Mm. But it could be the future.
Yeah.
And it's delightful.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's on Netflix. Nice. It's very easy to watch.
Yeah.
Fatherhood with My Father. And of course, they've just built this incredible rapport.
Yes.
Where you can see they've definitely gone like, okay, let's acty act a bit. So it actually plays out more like a narrative show than this kind of shaky camera catching the moments. You can, if you can sort of understand it, it's as if they've kind of planned the scene out.
But it still works,
but
right?
But it still works because it's
so much this. Reality shows are scripted in some way.
Yeah. No, but this one, but they still... In other reality shows, they still pretend it's on the fly. So the camera still sort of shakes around and moves and zooms in and out. This is like almost shot like an actual TV show.
Okay. Oh, cool. I like that, actually. Yeah. And Graham, what have you been watching?
No, I'll come back to it next week. I started watching Twilight of the Gods and I've been playing God of War Ragnarok, both of which are centered around Norse mythology, so they kind of connect to each other. But I'll get into it next week once I finish them both.
Okay.
You're such a tease, Graham. God. Okay, so I'm watching a great Korean cooking show. Did you guys ever watch Physical 100?
As one does.
Yeah, did you guys ever watch Physical 100 on Netflix?
No.
It's a Korean endurance show. So it's all the strongest athletes in the country. They're trying to find the most physical, the most perfect physical specimen. It's so stupid. Okay. And it's just like endurance challenges
I don't really look to the Koreans for physical endurance.
So these guys
endurance.
Those guys will fuck you up, Russ. Yeah. Just careful. Okay. Anyways, so it's clearly made by the same people. It's called Culinary Class Wars. And the whole premise is they're white spoons. They're these internationally renowned chefs, like Michelin star chefs, like celebrity chefs, whatever. And they're going up against black spoons, which are up and coming chefs. They haven't quite been noticed yet, but they're proper chefs. And there's like social media chefs, there's actual chefs who own restaurants. You're the social media chefs just... they get eliminated quick. Anyways.
Yeah. Myself and Liz often try like a TikTok recipe. And we get halfway through. They're like, this is bullshit. It's not working. It doesn't look anything like. I was like, I'd never expected it to. You've got to add a lot more water. You've got to do a lot more things.
So basically, this is Physical 100 meets MasterChef, right?
Okay. And but everyone is speaking Korean.
Yeah, it's all Korean. There's English dub, but don't do that. Just watch it in the language.
Watch it with subtitles.
But like, so the whole thing is just, there's only two judges. One is he's the only guy who has a 3 Michelin star restaurant in Korea, and there's another guy who's like a celebrity chef, almost like a Anthony Bourdain kind of guy, right?
Okay.
And there are, I think, 60 or there are 80 black spoon chefs, and 60 get eliminated in the first round.
Jeez.
Only 20 make it through.
That's a lot of contestants.
And it's brutal. It's so good. So they have like challenges. Like when they get through the first like round, they have to go up against the white chefs, and they have like certain challenges. But the first round just to show you how brutal it is. So I'm also hate watching American MasterChef. It's fucking garbage. Australian MasterChef, amazing. American MasterChef is stupid. They made a cake in the final once. It was fucking stupid. It was like red velvet cake. Anyways.
But sorry. You hate watching it.
I hate watching it.
I love that term.
So I hate watch it, and I'm just like, this is the worst show. So Americans, you know how American reality, they love to amp up the drama. They'll be I was born with both hands, and they're crying, right? It's fuck off, right? So here with the American one, it'll be like a lady who's like, you know, born with both hands, both her ears work, and she's crying, and they're like, wow, this is such a great dish. You're through, you know?
Yeah.
With the Korean one, so brutal. There's this old sweet little lady who's making a dish, and like she makes it for them. The guy toasts, he's like, it's too salty, sorry, you're eliminated straight away. And she's like, oh. And then another guy is like, yeah, it's my birthday. He has this whole like shtick about like how he plates up his food, like it's a performance. You have to like play the drums and stuff. And the guy eats it and he goes, congratulations, shakes his hand, he goes, you're eliminated. And the guy's like, what?
Oh god.
It's brutal.
But that's a lot of contestants.
Yeah.
It's a lot, but it's so okay, good.
But they weed them out quite quickly. They a little bit out. Like the other Korean show where everybody gets shot playing
It's Says called Octopus Game. I don't know. What is it called again?
Squid Game.
There we go. Season 2 upcoming.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah.
Okay.
New episodes out every Tuesday. Oh, fuck. It's so good. Oh, my God.
I found a TV show for you, Perrin. And then let's close off on that.
I know what's coming.
Over on
that. Let's say it at the same
over
time.
Over on Disney Plus. Is The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives.
Yep, Kira, my girlfriend, has binged it. Every Mormon I know has binged it.
It's this so wild.
It is wild. They do ketamine and drink soda. It's fucking insane. What the hell?
I wanted to watch the first 10 minutes of it just because I wanted to be able to speak about it and talk to you. So in good old Salt Lake City, Utah, the home of the Mormon people.
Particularly to Provo, Utah as well.
A group of women that became very famous on social media as beautiful, silly, young moms.
Yes.
And then it got revealed that they have like soft swinging parties.
Yeah, or, it's wild.
And
it's
so
insane.
They, I don't know how soft it has been, but they've basically been playing with each other's
define soft.
Well, that's what they said. They said swinging, but then on some occasions they said soft swinging, which is, I think, no penetrating.
Oh my God, there's a thing called soaking. Have you heard of this? Are we going down this road?
No, we're not. But the one woman, Taylor Frankie Paul, was at the heart of the scandal. And obviously that made them quite even more famous.
Yeah.
And so now they've made this TV show, which apparently the reviews are like, nothing's fucking secret about it. We all knew about these scandals. But yeah, it was set up interestingly where I was like, okay, this is very interesting people in a very interesting social setting, being Mormon.
Yeah.
And then they became scandalous. And then it then starts where two of them meet up for a very scripted, very bad coffee. And they talk about sort of each other. And the one brings up the fact that, like, she doesn't know how to initiate sex with her husband. And how do they have, you know, they're not having as much sex anymore. And I was like, I'm out.
I'm done.
Because they were very stupid women having a very stupid conversation.
Yeah, so for those of you who don't know, I was raised Mormon.
Yes, sorry.
Yeah.
Big reason as to why I'm bringing this up.
It wasn't just aimed at me because I like trash, you know. But yeah, like, so from what I've heard, I haven't watched it. I was busy multitasking while Kira was just gasping, watching this in the background. Yeah, so Utah Mormons are on another planet. they are ridiculous. Like so there's a great edit in it where so Mormons don't drink, right? So they substituted with soda, according to these Utah people, right? And she's like, yeah, so we don't drink, but we have a lot of soda to substitute. And then the very next cut, she's like, me and I can't remember the character's name, let's just say Rachel. She's like, me and Rachel did ketamine. It's like, and they also, get a lot of facelifts because that's their closest chance they can get to getting high where it's prescribed because they get the laughing gas, right? And they like will get like little facelifts. It's fucking insane.
Yeah. So it's just pointing out all the ridiculousness of being Mormon.
Yeah.
And through all this restriction, here are their sort of go-arounds and ways. And,
yeah. It's,
and that's, in theory, meant to be the sort of secret go-aways, but here it is exposing it. So
it's just wild because I know those Mormons in particular, most of them aren't active in the church. I'm not active, but like, it's just wild that some of them are like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm proud to be Mormon. You know, we're very morally this, that, and this, like, good. And then they fucking do swinger parties and drink alcohol and smoke weed. And, like, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
You can't claim to be all those things and do those things. You know what I mean? Just fucking own who you are. You
and
know
then,
what I mean?
Yeah, there was also just a great moment shortly before stopping the show. was like, oh, they're 21.
Yeah.
Or like 23. And I was like, oh, they just...
And they all have like three kids. Yeah,
yeah,
it's insane.
Yeah, because they got started, you know...
Yeah, yeah, so when you get back from mission, you, which is 19 to 21, they, the next thing they tell you to do is, okay, now you have to get married and have children because that's the next thing to do to get into the best form of heaven, right?
Right.
And so they all get married at like 22, 21, and their cars are all sticky because they have like 30 children. And yes, it's... anyways,
there's a large part of being Mormon about working to get into a better form of heaven.
So there are three levels of heaven. There's celestial, which is the highest. There's terrestrial and telestial. I can't remember which one those are. But the highest one is like top dogs. They like the fucking top of the food chain. You know what I mean?
And they don't do ketamine and coke.
Yeah. No, to get into celestial, you like have to have kids. You have to have been... baptized and sealed in the temple, which means you get, you have a family, you get sealed together in the temple. That means if anything happens, you will be together forever, no matter what, in heaven. Because a lot of people say, till death do us part, right?
Yeah.
Mormons don't believe in that. They believe in forever. So if you get married to someone, you stay with them forever. It's not like you die, you get to heaven, you're like, hey, baby, it's, yeah, it's, you know, I'm swinging tonight, yeah, you know?
Yeah. Where the chit's at.
Yeah, where the hoes at. But yeah, that's like celestial kingdom's like the highest one. So like those people are probably not anywhere near the celestial kingdom, allegedly.
Wild.
So yeah.
Wild. Okay. So that's over on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been really enjoying Bad Monkey, which is on Apple TV Plus. It's really like, it's worth you continuing and getting into it because it's got lovely like halfway through the show kind of swings.
Oh, okay.
Where all of a sudden you're like, what? That's not how I thought it was going to be. So that's a Vince Vaughn limited series, also written by Bill Lawrence, who is the same guy behind Shrinking. Also, not on Apple TV Plus, on Disney Plus, Only Murders in the Building is getting fun.
Yes.
I love that. Such so a that's good show. Episodes every Tuesday. So there's some good TV at the moment.
Nice. Yeah. We're still in the golden age of television.
Oh, we will be in it for a long
it's
time.
It's now the golden age of streaming.
Yeah, there you go. Sure. Yeah.
No, but those are good. All right. Lovely, guys.
Nice. Yay.
Thank you for a lovely day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you for a great shit talk here on our...
Yeah, sorry, I spewed crumbs at you, Graham. Well, I was yelling at you and talking at you. I'm sorry.
That's lovely. No, we appreciate you, P-Dog, and we appreciate those lists and those obscure Japanese films that will be very difficult to get hold of, but I want to try and seek them out.
No.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for listening. And we will see you again shortly.
Nice. Yay,
every Tuesday is our Clerks Chat. So come on back. And our home base is thevideostore.co.za.
Happy Heritage Day. Yay.
Happy Heritage Day.
Nice. Yeah.